show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Special, extra special All-Star Break edition, folks. The players may take a week off or so, but we don't. We are here to bring you Royals content, and that is what we're going to do. And when I say we, of course, I'm talking about myself, Jeff Hurren, with me, the indefatigable Michael Engel. Doesn't need an All-Star break himself. He's always ready to go. Mike, how are you doing on this wonderful evening?
Well, I think we should note with our special announcement right up front that we're actually going to change formats, and going forward, this will be a Pokemon Go podcast.
I was waiting for this for you to give the special reveal.
Yep. So that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to talk about the
Pokestops.
Yes. Those.
Who's ruling what gyms and so forth, and other Pokemon related things. So yeah. If you are into that sort of thing, then you've come to the right place.
Actually, I tried it out over the weekend. It's kind of fun. I never got into Pokemon when I was a kid, but it was like, hey, it's an excuse to go walk, and I could use that.
Yeah, you know, I actually was the original Pokemon. I was into the original Pokemon on Game Boy, but I haven't played since then. I downloaded it. I played it for about 10 minutes. It crashed on me once, and I was like, yeah. I don't know if this is, you know, it's definitely something that would normally seem like it's up my alley, but I deleted it. So I don't know. Maybe I'll download it again at some point and give it another shot. We'll see. But people are loving it, and good for them, man. Whatever, if you enjoy it, then more power to you.
Yep. We do a podcast as a hobby, so I'm not one to rip on anybody's hobbies.
Versions for hobbies. And I have right. Some of the nerdiest. I play plenty of other video games, especially games on my phone or whatever. So it's definitely not me at all.
I have a bunch of board games, so I mean.
It is most decidedly. A fun game that I can definitely see why it would be fun. Yep. And I may give it another shot eventually. But speaking of board games, have you ever played the game Hive? You ever played that game?
Hive? No, yes. I have not played Hive.
Check it out. My wife and I got it. It's very, very fun, very strategic. You don't need a board game. It's essentially like dominoes in terms of the pieces that you need. It just comes with these kind of...
You like lay out tiles and...
Yeah, and there's no board game or anything. You just know the rules and... It's these different you try and surround the queen honeybee, and then you've got these different pieces, and they all have different move sets and everything, kind of like chess. It's very very fun. I recommend you check it out for sure.
I might do that. I'm always in the mood for a new board game. So
another one is Ticket to Ride. I haven't played the actual
game,
but I play the electronic version on the iPhone. There you go. So
yep, I've got that. Yeah, I've got a lot. I've watched all of the tabletop episodes from Will Wheaton. So,
oh yeah.
So I know these. So I guess
Comic-Con. Will Wheaton's been. I don't know if he was there this year, but he was definitely there last year.
I think he does all of those, doesn't he? Like that's just what he does now. He's not.
That's kind of his livelihood, is just kind of rolling around, being the geek advocate, if you will.
Yeah, it's good work if you can get it.
Hey, if you can get it.
Yep. We don't have that job, though. We have other things to do.
Jobs, but our passion is this right here, what we're bringing you in. I suppose we should get to that point where we start talking Royals. I think they're going to start this week. General first half impressions. The first half is now over. It's obviously been, if you're like myself and you're an auditor and an accountant and you want to talk breaking down the actual halfway point of the season, the Royals are past that. But... in terms of the All-Star break is usually looked upon as the midway point. So even though the Royals have played more games than half a season, we'll call it the halfway point. The Royals sit right now tied for third place in the American League Central Division. They're 7 games behind the Cleveland Indians. They are 45-43. So, Mike, I'll let you kick this off here. First half impressions, what do you got?
Well, it's been almost like four or five different seasons this year because the Royals started out well and they've had their really tough stretches. And that stretch when they went to the West Coast where they just couldn't score at all, they ended up winning like eight games in a row. And then they, you know, right after they'd lost like eight in a row, it just, the Royal Coaster that we've talked about and that David Lesky coined, I mean, that it's just up and down all year. And, you know, I think it's an inconsistency that you would probably find when you have a team where, you know, pretty much half of your lineup has missed some time at various points. You know, you lose Moustakas for the year, you lose Gordon for a few weeks, you lose Perez. Never went on the DL, but he was out. You know, you lose a couple starting pitchers. It just Lorenzo Cain's on the disabled list right now. Wade Davis is on the disabled list. So a lot of chaos, a lot of obstacles. You know, that whole World Series hangover, that was one of the concerns. Would they be complacent? And I don't think they're complacent. I think they've just been inconsistent. That really starts with starting pitching and some of the positive luck that they've had over the last 3 years, kind of, you know, coming back to earth a little bit. You know, they've had good injury history, except for this year. The hits that seem to drop in are not dropping in now. So that seems like the story right now is starting pitching, some rough luck injury-wise, and a little bit of correction, I guess, to what the Royals' offensive model is, really kind of putting them in a position where they're actually pretty fortunate to be 45-43. You know, they've given up a lot of runs this year, and there is really only one consistent starting pitcher, and he wasn't even a starter when the season began. So it's a lot of things that the Royals have had to adjust to, and they're staying above water. I mean, you got to give them credit for that. They're facing off some pretty tough competition within the Central. Just, you know, every team is flawed in the Central, but they're not bad teams, except Minnesota, which, you know.
Yes.
But we're not worried about them. But, you know, no. Cleveland had that stretch where they won 14 in a row. And, you know, when you've got a bunch of middling teams and you go on a run like that, well, that can separate you from the pack. And that's what they're sitting at right now, where Cleveland's seven above the Royals and, what, six above Detroit? Who's in second? Chicago? I mean, it changes every day. So,
yeah, Detroit's actually in second. Royals have tried with Chicago.
Yeah. So,
half game.
You know, just still a lot of stuff going on. So, I mean, those are the first impressions. You know, a lot of inconsistency, a lot of weird stuff happening that the Royals have had to deal with. And, you know, I think they've mostly handled it, but there's still a lot of room for improvement and a lot of things that you want to see happen in the second half.
Yeah, you know, I am disappointedly optimistic, if that's even possible. But, yeah. You know, if you to say the Royals are going to go to start their title defense at 45-43, that's a little disappointing. You know, I predicted them to win 92 games this season. So to say, you know, they're only at 45 at this point, a little disappointed. But as you mentioned, you kind of went through the litany of issues that this team has had to deal with. You know, some of it is directly within their control, such as the inconsistent performance of Edinson Volquez, of Yordano Ventura, the incredibly slow start of Kendrys Morales, things like that. Some of it with the outside of their control. You know, I mean, technically, I suppose you could say the Gordon Moustakas collision was within their control, but those things happen. So, you know, that's something that you lose Gordon for an extended period of time, Moose out for the season. One play like that and your season is forever altered. You know, there's no way the season can be the same after that. And all these different injuries, like everything you said, and they've been able to, like, to as you mentioned, keep their head above water and still have a winning record. They're still in the, you know, still in the race for the division. I mean, they've, you know, there's seven games back, but I mean, Cleveland, the last month that Cleveland has played, you know, we can pull this up and see how ridiculously, you mentioned they've won 14 straight, but just overall, you know, even besides that, their record is still ridiculous. Let's see. They were 22-6 in the month of June. So there's simply no way they can keep that pace. You know, you look at the Royals last year and they had all those good months, and then, you know, August came around and it was a really poor month, and they kind of struggled, and people were, oh, are they going to lose the number one, first place in the AL? They did for a brief period, and then they finally took it back from the Blue Jays, and they didn't look back after that. So, you know, the idea that, you know, Cleveland can keep that pace up for the rest of the season it's probably not going to happen. Now, the second question to follow up from that is, regardless, do they have a big enough lead now at 7 games over the Royals, 6.5 over second place, that they can just kind of coast? Because you look at the Tigers, the White Sox, and the Royals, and if you say if Cleveland plays 500 ball the rest of the way, do they, let's see, there's 16 games over 500 now. If they played 500 ball, they'd be, what was that, 89-73. So
yeah, it's probably good enough.
Yeah, I mean, we thought at the beginning of the season and it would take about 88 games, could win the division pretty easily. You know, so the question is there any of those three teams bunched up there and roughly all in second place, is any of them going to be 8 games better than 500 the rest of the way? You know, and that's I think all the teams have shown they're capable of doing that. But if any of them is going to be, who knows? You know, so. And Cleveland, even they're not going to go 500. They'll be better than that. But you look at their other months. You know, they're 10-11 in April. They're 16-13 in May, and they were 4-6 in July here before the All-Star break. So that one hot month has really helped them. And rather than that, they've been pedestrian. So there's definitely the Royals are still in this thing, and they're even closer when it comes to the wild card. So there's definitely room for optimism. There's definitely room for hope on this season. You know, and it's. When you really sit back and think, it's just quite impressive that they've been able to be where they are, and it really shows you how good of a team they actually are, considering all the people that have missed time, all the injuries they've had, all the subpar performances they've dealt with from people that they imagined to be key contributors, and they're still here. So, you know, I mean, you look at previously I've compared this run over the last few years that the Royals have been on to kind of the Rangers from 5 or 6 years ago. If you look at the 2009 to 2012 Rangers, very similar arc there. And then in 2013, I believe it was, the Rangers just had a terribly injury-riddled season and ended up with as a 65-67 win team. And, you know, they didn't have enough depth. They struggled to really compete, and they kind of, you know, they were able to kind of patch things together, and now they're back. They're the best team in the American League right now, record-wise. So, you know, it's something where when you look at it that way, other teams that have dealt with this have completely faltered and just fallen on their face. But the Royals, all these injuries, all these different things, and they're still in the thick of it. They're still right there. And this team, if they've shown us anything, it's that they'll never cease to amaze you and surprise you. And they can go on a big run and win 15 out of 20 coming out of the break. And then, you know, if, let's say the Royals do that. They've already done it once this season. Say they win 15 out of 20 coming out of the break, and the Indians just go 500. I mean, then you're looking at, you know, the Royals are essentially they would be in first place at that point. So who knows how this thing's gonna shake.
Yeah, I've learned over the last couple of years to just, you know, anytime I feel like, well, it's time to give up on the Royals or count them out, it's like, no, you can't do that, because you know, they find a way. And at some point, yeah, the run will end. It has to. That's just the way it works. Is it this year? Is it next year? Is this year a speed bump? And then next year is their last hurrah? You know, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, like you said, they have the opportunity. They have the potential to go on a big run. And if that means that, you know, they either pull ahead of Cleveland or Cleveland slips and it becomes a four-team race, or Detroit and Chicago both slide down. You know, there's plenty of time for the Royals to do something. They can always go out and trade to get somebody and improve their team for the rest of the season. It's just a matter of, you know, what kind of depth can they give up to do that, which we'll talk about more probably next week, the week after. But you know, for the first half, they saw some guys emerge. Chester Cuthbert is hitting well. Whit Merrifield has played well. Brett Eibner has played well when he's been healthy. They've had Sal Perez has emerged as a strong player. And, you know, Danny Duffy came up and, you know, for somebody that they expected to be out of the bullpen, he's been one of the best pitchers ever since he's jumped into the starting rotation. So it's, you know, it's there's the hope is not lost. You know, you just need a few things to go right in the second half. And if the Royals get to a point where they're in a wild card game, well, you know, you're kind of rolling the dice. You'd rather have an actual series to play, but you know, anything can happen in one game, as we've seen, and all you need to do is get in. You know, the Royals showed that in 2014, and they showed that, you know, a lot of crazy things can happen last season in the playoffs. So, you know, I think I had them for 90 wins. I think it's going to be tough for them to get that, but you know, they've still got a shot. I mean, it's not Cleveland's division yet.
No. And, you know, at the very worst, that's an incredibly encouraging thing to see them at the end. You know, I mean, you want to talk pop, you know, comebacks or whatever the case may be for from a season perspective. I mean, I believe at one point last season, the Pirates were 21-25 or something like that, and they ended up with more wins than the Royals. And, I mean, you have to look no further than this very Royals team, who in 2014 was 48-50. And let me pull it up. Let me see how many games back they were. Do you remember off the top of your head?
I don't remember, but I remember people were ready to start selling pieces off.
Us included.
Yeah.
I mean, we were calling for it on the show. I'm not ashamed to admit such a thing.
Well, and Dayton Moore said, well, we can at any point we can go out and win 15 out of 20, and everybody scoffed at that. And then
we definitely gave him
that. And then they went out and did exactly that, and it's like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Was it exactly that, or was it even better? It was like, because
they went like 16 out of 20.
Yeah, or 16 out of 20.
Yeah, you're right. 16 and 4.
Okay, they were 48-50 as of July 21st. So 2 weeks from today, they were worse. So if the Royals go 3-7 in their next 10, they will match that 2014 record. And at that time, they were 8 games behind the Tigers.
And they finished a game behind them on the last day of the season.
The last day of the season. And at one point, they were, let's see, as
they took
of,
over first they, in August 11th.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then they lost it again August 30th. They were tied for a few days. Then they took it again September. They finally lost it for the last time September 10th. And then after that, they kind of battled a few games back and they finished a game, but they were, you know, home team for the wild card. So we all know what happened after that. Point being, the Royals, I wouldn't say they're in good shape. I wouldn't say that I am predicting that they win the division, but it's one of those things. It's not, you know, the 2009 Royals, you know, 10 games back and you're like, well, why not us? The Royals can make
right.
fun. You know, there was no true confidence in teams like those. It was just kind of maybe we catch fire and something lucky happens. This team, there is a precedent. There is a you know, you can look to past history and say this is certainly reasonable and within the realm of possibility. So,
yep. And the team themselves knows that. So,
absolutely.
The last group who's going to be panicking in any way is going to be the actual guys on the field who have impact on what's going
to
happen.
They've done that.
Yep.
And something that they could possibly hopefully use as a springboard is this All-Star break here. We talked about it last show. Royals had 4 All-Stars. Wade Davis was not able to participate. He's on the 15-day DL. So just Eric Hosmer, Salvador Perez, and Kevin Herrera were on the list, but that was still three Royals to play. And this, I mean, I'd have to go back and look, I suppose, but this is probably the best collective Royals performance in an All-Star game in history. It happened yesterday. We're recording this on July 13th, so the All-Star game was last night. I guess I would go back and look at that 89 one and see when Bo Jackson was, because George Brett was was in that game as well, I believe.
He wasn't in the game. He was, I think, elected to play, but he was hurt because George Brett was always hurt in the last 5 years of his career.
Naturally.
Basically all his career. Mark Gubazov was on that team, and I think he pitched an inning. Bo Jackson, of course, hit the home run, stole a base later, made a really good catch. An iconic kind of all-star performance. That game is actually, I had a VHS of that game. And when I was like 9 that summer, I probably watched that game, I don't know, 25 times. Or at least up until the point that Bo Jackson left.
And post-World Series Royals, post-85,
yeah.
pre-2014, that was it. I mean, as far as organization highlights, that was the best. That was as good as it got. Bo Jackson doing Bo Jackson things and being All-Star Game MVP. So, but last night, broke the mold from, you know, 2015, you would have thought Royals had 7 guys on the roster. You would have thought, okay, collectively they would have been able to, you know, but they did okay. Nothing super great.
Kane had a good game.
Kane had a good game. Kane was in the discussion for MVP, but Mike Trout, right? Won it. He had hit a home run.
Yeah, so, he had a home run. You had a home run. You're at the top of the list pretty much.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we saw last night. The Royals coming up in the second inning, both, because Eric Hosmer was hitting 7th and Perez 8th, is that right?
6th and 8th.
Yeah. I wasn't able to watch the game. I had to work late last night, so I wasn't able to watch. But so Eric Hosmer comes up facing none other than former teammate Johnny Cueto. And
so great.
the National League had already taken a 1-0 lead on a Chris Bryant home run.
Yep, a dreamy Chris Bryant home run.
Indeed. And so American League leader to answer, and none other than Eric Hosmer steps up. Boom, home run off Johnny Cueto in his first at-bat for the All-Star game. So right there, just as we talked about, if you hit a home run, you're in the running, no question. The next guy after Hosmer gets on base, Salvador Perez, comes up same inning against the guy he caught for 3.5 months, Johnny Cueto. Boom, 2-run homer, Sal Perez. American League takes the lead. They never relinquish after that point. Later on in the game, Eric Hosmer gets another RBI single. And apparently I read today that at one point Miguel Cabrera actually went to Ned Yost and said, "Don't put me in until after Eric Hosmer's third at bat," because he knew that Hosmer would have a good chance of the MVP. And he's like, if I come in before his third at bat, that's one less opportunity for him to do something good. That's going to get us. So that's going to get him opportunity or MVP credit. So pretty cool. Eric Hosmer had some very, very nice things to say about Miguel Cabrera after the game for doing that. Rightfully so. It ended up amounting to not much, cause he just got a ground out, but, all the same, it was a great gesture, and all the same, he won MVP anyway. 2-for-3 on the night, home run, RBI, and first Royals All-Star Game MVP since 1989. So a pretty overall pretty productive, pretty very good evening for the Royals in the All-Star Game. Because also we didn't mention Kelvin Herrera, but he pitched a scoreless inning as well.
On like 8 pitches and had a strikeout. And the Royals they drove in all 4 runs.
Yes.
For the American League, which is just like...
The joke on radio today was the Royals beat the National League.
Yeah. Did you see what Terry Collins said about Eric Hosmer?
Oh, yes. I was waiting.
He said something like he beat us with another bleeping hit or something like that. I'm getting
so tired
and sick of it. And like, that's great. I love it.
My tweet today that I was particularly proud of was that I would no longer be surviving on normal food, but I will subsist myself on the salty, salty, delicious tears of Terry Collins. nothing as much as I love to irrationally sports hate on things.
Right.
Nothing brings me more joy than having being in a situation where you get that much sports hate from another person or entity. So fantastic to see that. Good job, Eric Hosmer.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It was pretty cool to see that. And it put a lot of those naysayers of, you vote all these guys in the All-Star game, you know, shut them up too. So that's always fun.
Yes.
You know, we're Midwesterners. I mean, there's a chip on the shoulder, and yeah, there's a bit of an inferiority complex because the coasts get all the attention. So when our guys go out and do that, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where they also mentioned today that I saw in terms of TV ratings, right? So the Royals had something like an – or Royals. Kansas City had something like a 18.2 rating or something. And the next closest was Chicago, whose entire team – who they were the Royals of last year. Basically, their entire team was in it. And they had a 10.4 share or something like that. So those numbers are – I believe they're supposed to be representative of percentages of televisions in the area that were tuned to the game. So the number of residents in Chicago watching the game was far greater, but the percentage of people watching the game relative to the overall population of the area, Royals were by far and away the most and have been all season in terms of TV viewership, again, relative to the area's population. So, I mean, it's – yeah, I don't know what that's supposed to tell Major League Baseball, anything other than the Royals are – or that Kansas City is a baseball town. But I think somebody brought up a point that I saw once too that, you know, when you look at St. Louis, who's always got good fans in terms of, you know, attendance and viewership and things like that, and then the Royals now coming with – coming emerging as a fan base, and then, you know, different – San Francisco, even though they're technically a big market, you know, you don't usually think of them as the top markets or whatever. So seeing the high ratings for the past couple World Series with the Royals in it has maybe shown Major League Baseball that it doesn't have to be the coasts all the time now. They don't have to, not that the Major League Baseball ever actively did anything to try and get a team like New York into the World Series, but it was always kind of the joke that, especially when, you know, you had like the Royals and the Blue Jays in the ALCS, you know, it's like, oh man, the team from the Midwest and from Canada, like the
MLB, yeah, who's gonna watch that or
whatever, and it was, you know, breaking all kinds of records. So, you know, if nothing else, it just shows in Major League Baseball that and national media outlets, you know, there's a media, you know, there's something to be gained here, so it's worth coverage, but.
Yeah, and I think the Royals have like four of the top 20 or three of the top 20 jersey sales right now. Something like that. I don't remember.
Sounds about right.
What it was, but like Kane and I think
Salvi's got to be a big seller.
Yeah, Salvi probably, and maybe Wade Davis. I don't remember who it was, but I remember seeing something like that. Which that never happened. Like, for one, jersey sales weren't that big of a deal until the Royals were crappy. You know, right. And you might have somebody somewhere might wear like a Beltran jersey.
Well, they didn't start making like truly like really good jerseys. Too. Like, yeah, they used to be those old kind of mesh ones with just screen printed on numbers that were awful.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. There was no one was buying a Jimmy Gobble jersey.
No,
2006 or whatever.
No.
God, they were so. Yeah. So
oh, Jimmy Gobble.
We've come a long, long way.
We've come a long way. And as such, we can talk about our next topic here. Let's rewind for a second. Mike, let's take a step back here as we look at – we've talked about the Royals the last couple of years. But just look at Dayton Moore's regime here. And let's look at everything he's accomplished from a team and individual perspective. So we can start with 2009. And you got Zach Greinke winning the Cy Young, right? So, you know, Dayton Moore didn't draft Zach Greinke, but he stuck with him. He allowed him to leave and come back and kind of nurtured him back from being a, you know, guy who didn't know what he wanted to do to being a reliever to, I mean, I think he contemplated like coming back and trying to play shortstop at one point. And, and, you know, he came back as a reliever and they kind of nurtured him through everything and then became one of the most elite starters in baseball. Won that Cy Young, then you've got, you know, not much else happened. And then you go, they hosted the All-Star game in 2012. Billy Butler won the Silver Slugger that year for DHs. Then you go 2013, first winning season since 2003. Then 2014, first time back in the playoffs. first time winning the AL pennant since 85, World Series appearance, Lorenzo Cain, American League Championship Series MVP. You have, in the midst of all this, you've got Gold Gloves. You know, you, Alex Gordon has won three, Salvador Perez has won three, Eric Hosmer's won three, or has one of them won four?
Gordon should have four.
Gordon is four. Okay, yeah. And then Hosmer and Perez have three. Escobar's got one. Cain should have about two or three, but he keeps getting robbed for some unknown reason. And then you got 2015, obviously, first division championship since 85, another playoff appearance, another AL crown, another ALCS MVP, obviously. And
Morales got the Silver Slugger.
Morales got the Silver Slugger for DHs again. They win the World Series.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
That again.
That thing, yeah.
Salvador Perez, World Series MVP. In a perfectly symmetrical 30 years exactly after they last won the World Series. And then in the midst of all this, then you have this year, they're, you know, above 500, still in the hunt. But if you count this year's All-Star game, just since 2012, they've had 18 All-Stars in that five-year period. And now you've got Eric Hosmer, All-Star Game MVP. And if you look back, we talked about it last year, Cain had a good argument for being MVP last year, even though he didn't get it. And this year, if it wasn't Hosmer that won MVP, Salvador Perez would have won it. And he was last year's World Series MVP. So really, the only thing that Dayton Moore hasn't accomplished on either a team or individual level is having a Rookie of the Year, which Eric Hosmer finished third in 2011, Yordano Ventura finished third in 2014, and then having an MVP, and Lorenzo Cain finished third last year in 2015, and it's very possible that, you know, if the Royals put things together and make a run at this, and Eric Hosmer is a big piece of it, he's having that type of season that could develop. I wouldn't call him MVP right now, but, you know, if he gets hot and the team gets hot, he could have it's definitely could develop into an MVP type.
He'd get votes for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, when you hear all that, you try and distill all that information. I mean, what goes through your head?
Well, I mean, we knew this was going to happen all along, right? Like, yeah, sure. Every step of the way, we never doubted for
second. On board.
Just don't go listen to any of our episodes from 2012.
2013. Don't listen.
Yeah, just and a lot of 2013 too. Don't listen to those episodes either. Just listen to like last year's episodes and this one. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think some of that comes with the territory of having such a big farm system in 2011. You know, you guys like Perez and Hosmer, Moustakas, those are the guys getting into, you know, these All-Star games, and then you get Gold Gloves from guys you traded. Zach Greinke way four and Cain is doing his stuff. You know, a lot of good moves, and Dayton really got a lot of talent in here. Guys that he drafted, guys that he acquired, and you just watch the team. It's a complete transformation. I mean, it's like as soon as they got good, it awoke this dormant fan base, and you know, you see it now. You see TV ratings, jersey sales, attendance. You know, just everything, every aspect, the Royals as a franchise are just performing great, except for, you know, on the record, but they won the World Series last year. So,
and if you look at overall record,
yeah, from the last like 2013,
years, the Royals are the winningest team in baseball.
Yeah. So who would ever have thought that was going to happen, you know, in our wildest dreams, you know, back in 2012, we'd have been happy with a playoff appearance and maybe a fighting chance. And
absolutely
far surpassed, you know, I think what we really actually hoped for, especially for being longtime fans of the Royals. You don't expect to win, you know, so many people that I know were fans in the twilight years of George Brett or even beyond that. And there was never really an expectation that, hey, we're going to win. It was always a hope and even a pretty thin hope, you know, like 2009, I remember talking to some friends, and like, this is the year we got Mike Jacobs and Coco Crisp and Gordon and Butler are going to be on fire.
Mike
and it's
Jacobs.
Like, whew, and it didn't work. And 2012, you felt like it was going to be that year. And, you know, you just keep kicking the can down the road. And then they finally got there. And you see what happens when a little bit of success hits a town that really loves sports and loves baseball and has a really fun team to root for. And that's Dayton Moore. He's the architect of it all, and that's pretty awesome. Yep. to see him get that validation too, because I'm pretty sure he would be really, really frustrated to go through all that and have, you know, little to no success. Just from what we kind of know about him, you know, he's a humble guy. It's always we and us with him, but there, you know, you can't hide that. You know, it would be a personal thing to him, I think too.
And I believe it was Sam Ehlinger last year after they won the World Series that kind of, I heard him talking about it on the radio, where a lot of guys talk that talk of, you know, it's not about me, it's about the team, humility, humble, all that kind of stuff. But then when the success comes around, then it changes from we, us to me and I and those types of things. And, you know, because it's easy to say we and us when you're trying to deflect questions about the team losing 95 games again. But, you know, being able to keep that mentality all the way through the success is sometimes a rare thing, or is a pretty rare thing. And Dayton Moore never wavered. It's always, he always deflects the praise, you know, and he would always take the blame and he would deflect the praise. So it's been pretty cool. That's what honestly gets me the most emotional when I really think about it, is just like, you, regardless of things that we've said about Dayton Moore in the past, in terms of his, you know, his style and the way he runs the organization, regardless of that, we have always recognized his kind of passion for the sport and for the organization, which has always been there. And so to see him have that much and get to a point where he believed in himself, he believed in his process, and it actually worked to the highest degree possible. And now, you know, like looking at him at the parade, that was when I got the most emotional, because you could just see it. You know, it was like there was like a relief, but then there was also just, you could tell you could see how happy he was for everyone else. So that was, it's just, you know, definitely lots of credit to him. And that All-Star MVP, just as a culmination to this point, just kind of brings it home again how great of a job he's done over the last few years.
Just one more line on the resume. Pretty impressive one at this point.
Absolutely. So with that, I think we'll take a quick little break here, and we get back. If you remember from early in the season before it started, Mike and I made some over-unders and some bold predictions. So at the halfway point, we're going to review those and see where we are, if we're on track or if we're wildly off base. So stick with us and you'll find out how smart or how dumb we are.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Bo Jackson says hello!
The Vault.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your 3-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
Screaming till the sun comes out, and when we wake, we be the
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. As we mentioned before we went to break, we, at the beginning of the season, did a few over-under predictions where we looked at the baseball prospectus predictions for what players would accumulate stat-wise. We made our predictions on whether they would go over or under that particular stat line. And then we went outside the box as much as possible and made a few bold predictions. So we're going to take this time to review. Obviously, the season's not over yet, so some things are still up in the air, but we'll review kind of where we are and if some of our predictions of these things are on track to come true or way not off track. So we will see. Let's start with the All-Star Game MVP. Mike, what were the over-under predictions on Eric Hosmer?
Okay, so Eric Hosmer, and this episode was from March 23rd, 2016. It was our second annual over-under extravaganza and jamboree and cakewalk. I don't know. So if you want to go listen to that, we'll have it linked in here for more explanation of how we arrived at our over-unders and our bold predictions for all of these. But for Eric Hosmer, the projection on Baseball Prospectus was 15 home runs. And we both felt like that was kind of easy. That, you know, Hosmer pretty much hit around 15 homers every year, but had just come off a 19 home run season. So we felt like, all right, let's bump it up. So we went to 18, and that was the mark that we went, 18 home runs. We both went over. I was more confident. Jeff, you were hesitant to go over 18 back in March. As we stand here at the break, Eric Hosmer sits on 13 home runs. So it seems like he's going to be able to go over that mark. However, he's also gone through a pretty rough stretch where he really hasn't hit a lot of home runs in the last month. So I think it was June 10th he hit two off of Chris Sale, and he's only had one since, if we don't count the home run in the All-Star game.
Right.
But still, Eric Hosmer, we've seen this before where he basically goes, you know, through a stretch where he doesn't hit a home run, and then in two-week period he hits like four or five. So if he does that again at any point this season, he's pretty much right there. So I still feel confident that he's going to go over that mark as long as he stays healthy. You know, obviously if he gets hurt first game back, well, that can impact it, but he's on pace now. I think if he plays the rest of the season, he will definitely go over. Probably not much over like 20, but you know.
Yeah, I think 25. If he gets really hot, that's kind of the cap. If you ask me.
Yeah. So his fly ball rate, I looked at that. It's pretty much the same as it was last year, but the percentage of balls that he hits in the air that actually go out is significantly higher than his career. So that is something to keep an eye on. He still hits a lot of grounders, but the fly balls that he does hit, he's hitting them out of the park. And as we've seen before, he does have opposite field power. So that helps him a lot. And
that's not an unprecedented thing. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's some maturity there that, I remember my dad, when I was really young, telling me about Mark McGwire, how he's a big fly ball hitter, and he's like, eventually those fly balls are going to start turning into home runs. So Mark McGwire used steroids to make it happen, but, you know, we're talking about Eric Hosmer right now, so it's not unprecedented.
So I think he can definitely do it, and really just one hot stretch where he just hits a bunch of homers is probably going to get him at least to that 18 mark, and so then it's going to be a pretty easy jump from there for him to actually get over 18. So I think that one's pretty safe. You know, I would say that's probably the safest one of what we've got among these over unders.
Yeah.
You know, but you never know. He could go through a stretch. I mean, he hit what, 9 homers in a whole season in 2014. So, you know, it's not like it's not a guarantee. He could go through a stretch where he just doesn't hit one out.
And yeah, but he did miss quite a bit of time that season.
Yeah, he missed a month. So, you know, but still, that's 9 in 5 months.
Yeah, it's not good rough. By any means, but
that was 2 years ago. So, yep. It's a much different story now. So I think we're pretty good on that front.
I think so.
All right, so we'll move on to the next one. The next one, we looked at Salvador Perez. And a measurement on Baseball Prospectus called True Average, which is a weighted figure that tries to look at everything that a player does offensively and compile it into one number that's easily digestible. For Baseball Prospectus, an average hitter will perform at about 260 by this measurement. Our over-under was 265. Would Salvador Perez be better? Basically, would he be better than average or worse than average? And for myself, I felt like the way he'd get used, the pattern of his usage, the fatigue of a full season again after two extended seasons, I kind of felt like he was going to fall under it. That's how the trend had been, you know, where every year he's a little bit worse, a little bit worse. So that was my idea, that I felt like he was going to get tired, have some bad habits. So I was under. Jeff, you felt like he was going to be over. And at the All-Star break right now, you're currently on pace to take that one because his current true average is 290.
Boom.
Led a lot by 14 home runs, but he's also got a lot of doubles. And he's already matched his actual number of walks from last season. So he's got a whole second half to just add on to that walk number, which he only walked 13 times last year, which is ridiculous.
That's absurd. I didn't even realize. God, that's absurd.
So he's at 13 at the All-Star break. He has, you know, tons of games with which to surpass that. And, 14 home runs. I mean, 21 was his career high. He's got a good shot to beat that, too. He's basically been hitting well all season. He had over 23? And then he went right back and was on fire until we hit the All-Star break, and then he hit a home run in the All-Star game. So,
boom.
So, I guess he's probably safe to say that he's looking a lot better. That power is definitely going to help him in this area, and currently Baseball Prospectus has him projected for a 266 true average for the rest of the season. So that's from today to the end of the year. So their projections would say that he's going to stay well above that over-under that we set. And really, he'd have to basically completely collapse performance-wise to fall under it. And I think he's got enough power to contribute enough to at least keep pace to where he meets the projection for the rest of the season and will definitely stay above that. So if I had the opportunity to change mine, I would change my mind now. But we made these predictions in March, and they're written in pen, so they're not going anywhere.
Yes, written in pen, scrawled on lined notebook paper in a three-ring binder.
It's a Moleskine journal, actually.
Oh, there you go. Okay. But that even more permanent than a three-ring binder.
Right. This one's saddle stitched and everything, so it's like it's set. Yeah,
there it is. So what do we got? Who's next on our list of over unders?
Next is Lorenzo Cain, and the projection was for his batting average, which Baseball Prospectus, their median projection for him was 269 as a batting average. He's currently hitting 290. And we were both over. You said he was going to be a big over. I said it was an easy over. We could parse the statements. I would say they're the same. I'd say we were both very confident he was going to be over that. If you look at what his 80th percentile projection the rest of the year is, it's 289. Kane's always weird because, you know, we saw it a couple of years ago where he had a good season and everybody thought, well, next year he can't possibly do that again. And then he did it again. And then coming into this year, it was, well, it's got to fall back at some point. You know, mostly related to his batting average on balls in play. So in 2014, he hit .380 on balls in play. Last year hit .347. This year he's hitting .349. And in each of those years, his line drive rate has gone up. So I feel like he's pretty stable as far as what he can do. Now, we'll see when he comes back. He, you know, had this hamstring issue, so maybe that takes away some infield hits. But overall, I think he's going to continue to hit well. Probably going to stay around that 290 mark the rest of the way, but he's going to have a prolonged slump to to drop below that 269, I think. And, you know, we've seen Kane go through those, but we've seen him be really hot too. So I think it'll balance out by the end. I think we will both be correct in being an over, either big or easy, or a big easy over, which is sounds like something at Mardi Gras.
Either or. Or yeah. It sounds like a possible meal that you could purchase at Denny's.
It does, yeah. The big easy over.
There
and
it
some
is.
Some Zydeco music playing too for it.
It's for
like
sure.
A Cajun omelet or something.
Yeah, the big easy over. All
big
right.
Easy over.
I like it.
Get on
with it. I like where your head's at. So with Lorenzo Cain, I think we've seen players before be able to consistently outpace their BABIP, and I think he's I shouldn't say it like that. Been able to consistently
overperform
in terms of BABIP to the relative mean. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm not calling Lorenzo Cain a Joe Mauer or an Ichiro, but those types of players.
Those are the exact two players that you cited before, too, I think.
Yeah, well, when I first was kind of dealing with statistics and starting to really get into it, you know, I started doing the show and I started writing and more seriously and everything. I remember looking into BABIP and I'm like, okay, you know, really taking a deep dive into it and trying to figure out how it all worked. And it's why it's still to this day one of my favorite stats. And those were the two that I looked at. I'm like, okay, you know, who are the leaders in BABIP for a particular season? I think this would have been like 2011 or something. And it was Joe Mauer and Ichiro. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, those guys are good hitters. Did they consistently have that? And what does that mean? And they were guys that consistently outperformed the league average in BABIP. And then it just became the norm, you know, and similar to on the pitching side, you had someone like a Bruce Chinn who would consistently have like a 280, you know, at least in his peak Royals years, you know, he was, you know, 2, 3, 4 years there. He was having that BABIP below 300 and he was able to sustain it. So it's like when you, if you want to look at all these different statistics, especially with pitching, that's not ERA or something like that. You know, eventually over a long enough time frame, ERA does become the most predictive stat. So, you know, regardless of what Lorenzo Cain's BABIP or any of these other statistics will say, you know, eventually, you know, he hit 301 in 2014, 307 last year. He's at 290 right now. And eventually he's just going to be a 290, 300 type hitter. So there it is.
Yeah. I mean, he's legit. You know, it's
absolutely
just what it is. He's legit. I mean, he's in his that peak year, he's at the top of his curve, that aging curve, but
yeah, he's not going to get much better.
Yeah,
but he can another
he's got another couple years of this probably
of this type of production is not outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I mean, we will probably have him in the same spot next year and we'll probably be over on him again and we'll probably be right, and that probably the last year we'll be right.
Yes, and it'll probably be the last year he'll be a Royal.
Yep.
Unfortunately. But anyway, moving on, who's next on the list?
Next is Ian Kennedy, who at the time was a big free agent signing. I mean, he still is, but at the time, you know, we didn't know anything to kind of rely on. We just kind of had his track record, hadn't seen him as a Royal and with this team. The over-under projection that we went with was 174 innings pitched. We both went over, because he has that tendency and that track record of being a workhorse. He's currently at 99.2 innings pitched through, I believe it's 17 starts. So he's basically just shy of 6 innings pitched per start, which it should put him pretty easily on pace, especially if he makes 15 more starts this year. You know, I think, you know, what is that? 90 more. So he's going to pretty easily beat it if he goes to that rate.
Right.
The only thing that might be a problem is if he does have any kind of an injury, obviously, and he's
naturally
had small nagging things, but never really. One of the things that we mentioned was that, you know, he really, his injuries were like hamstring and like freak injury. Like he cut his hand washing dishes. You know, you can't say someone like he's injury prone because he cut his hand washing dishes once, you know, big deal. they're not really anything in his arm. There's, you know, not shoulder, not elbow, nothing like that.
Right.
So you feel pretty reliable, you know, that he can probably go through and pitch a full season and make 30 starts. And if you're going 30 starts at six innings a start, that's 180 innings. So, you know, I would say he's on pace to beat that. Now, if he does have some struggles and gets shelled and gets pulled early, then maybe it might be something where they skip a start here, or he goes on the DL and misses like three or four starts. Well, then, yeah, that's going to change it. And that's kind of part of the projection, is that, hey, you know, they're partially projecting playing time the same as they are performance. And, you know, I think Baseball Prospectus, part of it is saying that, hey, we don't expect every player to be healthy. But I think he's got a good shot at this. It's not a lock. I feel much more comfortable about each of the three hitter predictions that we made. But this one seems like something that, if he continues at what his trend line is, I think he's pretty safe for it. I wouldn't change my mind if I had opportunity to.
Yeah. All right, so who we got? Who's next on the list?
Last one of our over-unders.
Okay.
Was Yordano Ventura, and it was the same kind of thing. It's innings pitched. We had 168 innings pitched. I was over. You were way over, which we'll get into.
168 yeah. innings pitched, yes, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he is at 94.1 in 17 games started. So he's kind of at the same sort of pace that Ian Kennedy's at. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he does, figured it up, about 15 starts at five innings pitched each, he's got it. And, you know, I think that's something that for Ventura, yeah, sometimes you're not sure, but, you know, he's somebody who also seems to kind of have, even if it's a sloppy game, he can sometimes still get through and give you six innings sometimes. You know, the actual final results may not be great, but he can sometimes get you those innings and soak them up. You know, plus it's a, you know, it's a lower, it's basically what, it's only six innings difference between his and Kennedy's projection. So if they're pretty much on the same pace now, it stands to reason that if we think that Kennedy can do it, it's probably in range for Ventura, unless something happens, they acquire a couple pitchers and they move them into the bullpen. That would not be something we would expect.
Or he gets suspended
again. Which was another thing when we were talking about it. We were like, well, you can't project that he's going to get suspended. He's probably not going to throw at someone else. Whoops. but still, they managed to work that so that he still made a pretty good amount of starts. So yeah, he's on pace with everybody else.
Yeah. And, you know, with these two, I think the biggest thing that works in their advantage in terms of this prediction for us, or I should say that works in our advantage for our prediction, is Kennedy, I think, no matter what, would be in the rotation. But with Ventura and the way he's been pitching this season, when you look at the fact that Chris Young was pitching so horribly and he was in the rotation for as long as he was because mm-hmm. of the just lack of options – then yeah. if you can't find anybody to replace Chris Young, then how the hell are you going to replace Yordano Ventura? So, so that and then,
guy who's,
and
you then feel who is you your number replace? One guy.
Exactly. And then who are you going to replace, you know, Ian Kennedy with? You got to see, you got to find three pitchers who are better than those three pitchers. And it just, something like that is most likely not going to happen with this current Royals team this season. So unless they trade for somebody, as you mentioned, but no matter who they trade for, Ian Kennedy's getting his starts through the way.
So the last guy that they would, well, I mean, I don't know. They'd have to probably trade for two guys. And that would be the only way. That would probably bump Duffy and Ventura. You couldn't bump Duffy, though. So I don't, yeah.
You can't bump Duffy at this point.
That's a good point. I don't think that there's much in the way of those guys getting moved around. Unless they do happen to, you know, get, I don't know, Rich Hill and who else is out there? Irvin Santana. Julio Teheran.
Irvin Santana, the prodigal son.
Yeah.
As we return. That would be an interesting move.
I think Irvin Santana and Edinson Volquez would be kind of fun to just see them hang out.
Yeah, you know,
they're both chill dudes. Whatever.
Hang out, eat some bananas.
Eat some bananas, you know, like Irvin eating the banana, just leaning against the railing. It's like, cool as could be. Like, okay.
Yeah, I would not hate an Ervin Santana move. I don't know if it would be, depending on what it would take to get them, I don't know that it would be all that great, but I would not hate anyway. Yeah, I think for those two, we're on pretty good track.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel like we're definitely going to miss them. You know, it's like, I don't remember, I think there was one last year that we were just way off on. I don't remember what it was. I think it was Alex Rios or something, you know, like batting average. He just, obviously didn't meet anybody's expectations or even their mildest expectations for that matter. But at least until October, it was okay in October. But that's it for our over-unders. We were pretty optimistic compared to the projections, which kind of makes sense. Projections, I think, kind of, they're built in to be a middle ground anyway. So, I think over is an easy thing to pick, but we do have a rationale behind it, and it looks like our rationale is pretty strong, I would say. So we'll see how that turns out. Obviously, things can happen, but people stay healthy. I think we're in good shape.
So now we're going to move on to the bold predictions. We'll save mine for last. I feel like mine may or may not be the juiciest. So start with your first bold prediction, Mike.
All right, my first bold prediction, and I went back and listened to the episode to see kind of exactly how I phrased this. I said that Dylan G was going to be a steal.
Okay.
I also said that he was going to be a significant player for the Royals this year.
Okay.
I also said he'd be their third best starter, which, the way you look at it, maybe that's possible, but oh boy. He hasn't been bad. He just hasn't been good. You know, he's thrown 57 innings. A large part of that has been out of the bullpen, mostly spot starts. It's not like he's ascended into a rotation spot. 4.11 ERA. He's got a 49-20 strikeout to walk ratio, which it's better than 2-1, and that's okay. I mean, it's pretty average, pretty blah. Another thing that I mentioned was that I felt like his BABIP was going to go down because he was playing behind, playing with a better defense, and it has gone down, but it was 355 last year and is 333 this year. So really hasn't change, you know, I mean, that's still
not
pretty
an appreciable
high
difference.
Yeah, it's not what you would expect. Plus, he's given up a good amount of home runs, so he's really not been the guy that I thought. He's been a valuable piece as far as, you know, again, a guy who can spot start, a guy who can come in and fill in for Chris Young when Chris Young has to bail out. You know, when Chris
it's
Young
basically
has
at this point, it's the two of them are like co-starters.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, it's almost like a piggyback thing, but the problem is you have to give up like six runs to get to the piggyback part.
You know, no big deal.
Right, just one of those things. So I don't think my bold prediction on that front is going to turn out, unless he just goes on a tear. I mean, he could go on a, you know, who knows? Maybe he gets some starts and, you know, starts to pitch really well and things come together, but probably
one
not
of those patented Dylan G second half runs, you know.
is that a thing? I don't know.
I don't know. I just made it up. It is now.
It is now the Dylan G surge. I mean, it'd be cool, but
yeah,
I wouldn't. I was off. I was wrong on that one.
Speaking of wrong, why don't you tell him what my first bold prediction was?
All right. You want the really bad one then?
Or we'll save the really bad
the high profile one, or the bigger name one, or the smaller name one?
Smaller name.
To do it for right now?
Yes.
Okay, so you were in the same kind of area of the back rotation guys, and you were really high on Chris Medlin. So high that you even said that your bold prediction was that he would throw over 125 innings, most of those as a starter, and he would finish up with an ERA below 3.5. So,
all right.
I mean, we can get
moving on.
Right. Needless to say, 24.1 innings pitched. He's got a 7.77 ERA, and he's been pulled from a rehab trip. So who knows? He's had shoulder problems, and, you know, you can't predict those. But he also didn't look sharp for a lot of, you know, the early season, and not great in spring training. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we'll see him again. You know, yeah. It'd be nice if he could develop, but yeah, I don't know. I think the ship may have sailed on Chris Medlin, which is a shame because that was a really fun signing when they did it before last year. And
yeah. I mean, it was one of those lottery ticket signings. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, they knew going in that there was a good chance. He's had two Tommy John surgeries. You know, those guys don't have a good track record most of the time. I mean, you don't even – the only guys you hear about are the exceptional guys who actually manage to make it back, and there are very few of those. And even when they do come back, to stay at a major league level, it's still really difficult. I mean, it's hard enough anyway, but when you're working on your second ligament surgery, it's like, whew, that's tough. So you missed on that one, but I don't know if I would argue – I don't know. You always had the Sean Manaea and Kyle Zimmer specials the last 2 years on your bold predictions.
Yes, I was. Yep.
But
I'm off it. I'm off it now.
Yeah, very noble pursuits, but they didn't happen either.
Nope.
But these are bold predictions.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Medlin was, he put in some valuable innings for the Royals in 2015. So
he did. He did. He earned his ring, and he's a cool dude. And he got a base hit, I think, last year against, like, the Brewers or something. Something like that.
There it is.
So, yeah, we can move on from that one. That one was a miss as well.
Yes. Moving on. So, side note before we move on. I had Lorenzo Cain's stats pulled up because we were talking about him. And on Baseball Reference, they have their little nicknames next to their names.
Yeah.
Crunch Wrap. This is a nickname for Lorenzo Cain.
It's
familiar. Are you familiar with this?
I know that it's on his Baseball Reference page. I've never heard a single person in the world call him Crunch Wrap ever at all. It comes from when he stole a base in the World Series. And they did one of those promotions where everybody would get a free Crunch Wrap.
I forgot about
But nobody's ever called him Crunch Wrap. And it's like the purpose of a nickname is because that's what you call someone. Big Poppy's a nickname. Names. People call him Big Poppy as much as they call him David Ortiz.
Right.
Do you know, I gave it away. You know, Oil Can Boy's first name?
No.
It's Dennis. No one knows that it's Dennis Boyd. They call him Oil Can Boyd. So no one calls him Crunch Wrap Kane. Sounds like a terrible superhero.
Single person. That sounds like a real
It's like, what is your special power?
Grilled on a flat top. For everyone.
Just. Yeah, I don't know. That's dumb. Their nicknames are bad on there.
All right. Our last two bold predictions.
Okay, so my second bold prediction was that Kelvin Herrera would have a better season than Wade Davis. Which it felt like hanging out there, but I'm confident
bold
in Herrera.
At the time.
And, you know, Herrera's having a good year. Wade Davis is still having another really good year. Wade Davis so far is having a better year.
I think that's arguable. Reliever stats are so volatile that,
yeah,
you know, one more bad outing can skew the stats so much more. But I think you could make an argument that Herrera's having a better season.
It's possible. I didn't look at
a
way to
fudge
the numbers.
I'm going to make that argument, but I think you could.
Just looking at them as a comparison, Davis, and as a closer, Davis is going to work fewer times because they're going to save him for those situations. So he's thrown in 30 games, 29.1 innings pitched, 28 and 12 strikeout to walk ratio. He has not allowed a home run. He's allowed a 176 batting average against him and has a 1.23 ERA. Another strong year, but you know, his control was shaky earlier in the year. He hasn't been He's still good. He's still good. There's no way to slice him with Davis. He's been really good.
He's been very good.
And allowing no home runs when everybody's allowing home runs this year, that's significant as well.
Mm-hmm.
Comparing him to Herrera, Herrera's at 40.2 innings pitched. Again, he'll work more than one inning every now and then. He's a guy who will get used in close games while they're waiting to get a lead to get it to Wade Davis. So he'll work a little bit more. 1.77 ERA. He has allowed two home runs, though I think one was to Manny Machado, which I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Give up, you know, he's not a mortal man. Anyway.
One of the top 10 players in baseball.
Yeah. Herrera's allowed a 196 batting average against. The key thing for him, and this is where maybe you could make a pretty simple argument as far as like dominance, his strikeout to walk ratio is 52-7. Pretty strong. It's more
disgusting.
Than 7-1. And one of the things that I really liked coming into this year was that you already have a guy who throws over 100 and has pretty good movement on it. He's got a really good changeup. So that's something that, and he'll throw it to righties. You know, he'll throw it, you know, at least in the dirt to right-handed batters. But then he moved in and brought in that slider, which is, it's almost the pitch that he feels most confident in right now, which is funny because he didn't even really whip it out until late in the year and in the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really contributing to him being a menace to batters. And so they've got to gear up for 3+ pitches where he can go full bore on them and just go at them. And, you know, he's throwing with good control too. That's been kind of a concern at different times through his career. And so he's pitched very well. And, you know, it's one of my favorite relievers of kind of all time. And he's doing well. Maybe there's an argument as a more dominant reliever. I think, and they're both having very good years. So it's one of those, like, it's an embarrassment of riches that
yes.
they're both having really good seasons. To say that one is better than the other is kind of like, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's, they're both great. And
yeah,
and that's
you're picking nits at that point.
Yeah. It's like, so I wouldn't call that a win, but I think I was in the right neighborhood at least, which is for our performance on these, it's pretty good. It's as close to a win as we're going to get on these bold predictions from March.
How absurd is Wade Davis's ERA plus over the last 3 years since he's been a full-time reliever? It's 409 for the 3 year period. That's just insane.
That's
100 is league average, by the way, folks. 409. He is more than four times better than a league average pitcher.
That's crazy. And that's over a 3 year, 2.5 year stretch.
Yes. So his career is 112 because he put in all those years as a starter where he was just kind of middling to bad.
Crappy starter. Yeah, who would have figured that he was going to become that guy?
I'm just glad he's a Royal.
Yeah.
And so that brings us to the final bold prediction, which was mine. I can't even bring myself to say it. Mike, just put it out there.
Well, you predicted that Yordano Ventura would get Cy Young votes.
Oh, jeez.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I feel like on that press your luck. You know, no whammy, no whammy, no whammy.
Mm-hmm.
The little whammy animation is Yordano Ventura throwing a ball at Manny Machado.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to get Cy Young votes unless he goes on a tear. Like, if he,
and he would have to like not allow a run the rest of the season, like a Jake Arrieta type run.
Yeah, well, you did say just votes, so I mean that's ballot. So, but still, that's a high standard to get from where he's starting. If he was average and then went on a tear, maybe you could see it. But
if he was at like a 3.8 to 4.1 range right now and just kind of, you know, doing okay, you'd be like, all right, you know, you can still make waves. But
yeah,
at this point, it's not going to happen.
It's going to be tough. But if he does pitch well from the second half on, that's good for the Royals and great for Ventura. Yeah. Even if he doesn't meet the conditions of your bold prediction, which is fine. That's okay.
And And as we look towards that second half, you know, that's kind of the key, almost, if you will, that if Ventura can put it together, and that's the biggest piece. And then we talked about it before that the difference isn't necessarily, I don't know that Volquez is any more consistent this year, or I'm sorry, last year than he was this year. And stick with me on this, but I think his bad games are as frequent as they were last year, but his bad games are just so much worse. So I guess you could argue that that's a level of consistency, but in terms of like game in, game out, I think, you know, his good to bad game ratio is the same. It's just his bad games are, you know, giving up 13 runs versus 4 runs or 3 runs. And so, you know, we've talked about this before, but so if you can bring those back down, not just Volquez either, Volquez, Kennedy, Young, you know, whoever, if you can bring those back down to where the bad game is 4 runs in 6 innings instead of 7 runs in 6 innings, and if Ventura can get to that place as well, then, I mean, you could be looking at 5 games difference just from doing those types of things. You know, when you look at that game against the Yankees that the Royals had, that they, I think it was Kennedy that was pitching, where Kane hit 3 home runs and they lose 10-7, right? So that's just one that jumped out of my head. You score 7 runs, you think you're in a pretty good chance to win that game, especially with Kennedy on the mound. So, you know, that's one of those games where if you can marginalize that that start and make it from a horrible one to just a struggle start, then all of a sudden the Royals maybe win that game. Maybe there's a handful, maybe there's 5 games like that they've had. And if they had that, they'd be 50-38 right now, and they'd only be 2 games back of the Indians. So, you know, those are the types of things that if the Royals are going to tip the scales in their favor to try and win the division going forward, those are the things that needs to happen. Because I don't, you know, we've talked about the Rich Hills of the world and all that kind of stuff, and I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't know that it would be smart for the Royals to make it happen. So
yeah, relative to what they'd have to give up for the performance, it's like, last year it was Cueto and David Price, and those were the big arms out there. Mike Leake, yep. Each of those three are better than Rich Hill and the best guys who are out there.
Was Cliff Lee last year too, or was that the year before?
Cliff Lee didn't pitch last year.
Or not Cliff, whom am I thinking of? Cole Hamels.
Cole Hamels. Oh, yeah, Cole Hamels, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are 4 big names, and this year the biggest name is probably Julio Teheran, and the Braves are probably going to be asking for
a ton.
A lot. I mean, they're...
Because he's still got, what, 3 years control?
He's after got this year? Some control, and they are optimistic that they're going to start seeing their players come up, and... You know, they have to be bowled over to make the move, and the Royals don't have a system to bowl anybody over. Yeah. And so that's not going to happen. And I don't think they're going to trade him anyway. So that leaves like Hill and Santana and, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, just a few other guys out there. There's not a lot of good arms out there. There's a lot of average-ish arms. And you know, who knows if the Royals are going to go.
Because of that, it pushes up the price. So you don't want to be caught in a situation where you think you have to make the run this year, and you end up giving up Mondesi for Rich Hill.
Right. When you didn't even have to give him up for Johnny Cueto last year.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that, but we just kind of thought it'd be good to give a little rundown where the Royals stand right now, what they've been, and then hopefully Eric Hosmer and Sal Perez, having good performance in the All-Star game, will energize this team. They'll get Kane back, they'll get Wade Davis back, and Gordon and all the rest will be all at full health, and they'll be able to make a run in the second half. So I mean, I think they're gonna be in it till the end, whether it's the division or the wild card, and it's gonna still be a fun season, and we're gonna be here every step of the way, just like we've been so far. So stick with us. It'll be a fun rest of the way. I'd like to thank you all for listening, as always, as we go through our show, you our how smart we really are with all the predictions. We won't hide from them, we'll stand by them, so that's what they are. We'll go over them again at the end of the season, but thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. We got a fun second half ahead of us, so stick with us through the season. We'll always be here. Thanks for our great sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, and of course, Baseball Prospectus, lets us do what we do. So thank you all so much for listening. We will see you next time, and as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.